Okay, so imagine this. You're a law student. You're probably cramming for like a crim pro exam. You stumble upon this case, and a murder conviction hinges not just on the trial itself, but on something that happened way back in the grand jury proceedings.
Interesting.
We're diving deep into that today with Commonwealth v. Mayfield. It's a 1986 decision from the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court.
Okay.
And it really grapples with this like fundamental question about our justice system.
All right, I'm ready.
All right, so when does evidence that's presented to a grand jury, potentially flawed evidence,
Yeah.
when does that actually cross the line to invalidate an indictment? It's not just about whether the trial was fair, it's about whether the charges themselves had a legitimate foundation.
Right.
And this case really makes you think about the integrity of that very first step in the criminal process.
Absolutely. So we're going all the way back to the grand jury
Yeah, back to the beginning.
before a trial even happens.
Exactly. And the backdrop here is, it's a heartbreaking case. Back in 1983, 11-year-old Mary Ann Hanley was murdered.
Tragic.
And Val Mayfield, who was living with her family at the time, was accused.
Oh, wow.
What followed was this whole series of legal proceedings. There was an acquittal on a related charge, a hung jury in the first murder trial, and then finally a first-degree murder conviction.
Okay, a lot going on there.
But what's so interesting for us is the legal battle that took place after that conviction.
Got it.
The defense actually challenged the validity of the original grand jury indictment.
Interesting. So they're not saying he's innocent. They're just saying the grand jury indictment was invalid.
Right, exactly. Like they shifted their focus all the way back to the beginning. So what happened there? What evidence was presented to the grand jury?
Yeah, that's a really strategic move by the defense to
Sure.
kind of like, sidestep the trial itself and go back to this earlier stage.
Yeah, almost like a procedural attack. So let's get into the specifics then. What did Detective Ahern, who was, a key witness, what did he tell the grand jury that later became so controversial?
So Detective Ahern presented a few key pieces of information to the grand jury.
Okay.
He testified about the cause of death being strangulation
Okay.
and stated that semen had been found
Right.
and even mention a cigarette lighter being discovered.
Oh, wow.
So, this definitely painted a picture for the grand jury.
But like we said, the defense challenged all of these points.
Yeah.
Later on, they raised questions about the reliability of the evidence, especially the medical examiner's findings.
Right. So what was initially presented as fact may not have been so clear-cut.
Exactly. And it's also important to note that, Detective Ahern wasn't the only one who testified.
Right.
There was this eyewitness named Kevin Gallagher who also gave crucial testimony.
Yeah, and eyewitness testimony can be really powerful for a grand jury.
Yeah, for sure.
It puts a face to the story and adds a layer of, human experience to what can otherwise feel like a very dry legal proceeding.
Right. Like you can imagine being a grand juror and you're hearing this firsthand account
Yeah, it's compelling.
really paints a picture.
Exactly.
So after that conviction at trial, why double back to the grand jury proceedings?
Well, like it's said before, it's a really strategic move.
Yeah.
If the defense could argue successfully that the indictment itself, the grand jury indictment, was invalid because it was based on improper information,
Right.
potentially the entire case could be overturned.
Wow.
The conviction, the trial,
Everything.
yeah, it goes away. It's a way to just completely undermine the prosecution's case and
Yeah.
potentially, if the indictment's thrown out, there may not even be a need for a retrial.
So it's really high stakes.
Absolutely high risk, high reward for the defense.
Okay, so then what was the central question that the court had to wrestle with in this Mayfield case?
So the core issue was whether using Detective Ahern's testimony, which was disputed later on. Yeah.
Whether that actually impaired the grand jury's proceedings to the point where the indictment should have been dismissed.
Right.
Like when does a flaw in the grand jury process become fatal to the whole case?
Exactly.
That's what the court had to figure out.
And how did they approach that? How did they try to answer that question?
So they used what's called a three-part test for impaired grand jury integrity.
Okay.
This test, it's like the bedrock for figuring out these claims.
All right, so break it down for us. What are the three parts?
Okay, so the first part looks at the evidence itself
Okay.
and whether the prosecutor knew it was false
Right.
or was reckless about its truthfulness.
So basically, they knew or should have known.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
The second part looks at the purpose behind presenting that evidence.
Okay.
Was it presented with the intention of getting an indictment?
So even if it was wrong, was it presented in a way to try to get this person indicted?
Yeah, was it meant to sway the grand jury? And The third part, and this one's often the hardest to prove.
Is probable influence.
Okay.
Did that evidence likely influence the grand jury's decision to indict?
So did that evidence actually make a difference?
Yeah. In other words, if they hadn't heard that evidence, would they have still indicted the defendant?
Hmm. That seems like a tough thing to prove.
It really is.
Like, how do you go back and figure that out?
It's a lot of speculation, and, you know, you're trying to get inside the minds of the grand jurors,
right?
Which is, you know, impossible.
So why is it so hard to challenge an indictment then, if you have to meet this three-part test?
Well, there are a few reasons.
Okay.
It's really hard to prove what someone knew or should have known at a certain point in time.
Right.
Especially when you're dealing with something like a grand jury where the proceedings are secret.
Right. It's all behind closed doors.
Exactly. So you don't really know what was said or how the evidence was presented.
Hmm.
Plus, courts are hesitant to second-guess grand jury decisions.
Understandably.
They want to respect that process. You know, and dismissing an indictment, it's a big deal. It's a drastic measure.
Right.
So you really need to have strong evidence of misconduct to get to that point.
Okay, so with this three-part test in mind, let's look at the majority opinion in Mayfield. What was their reasoning for upholding the indictment?
So the majority acknowledged that there were issues with Detective Ahern's testimony.
Yeah.
But they said ultimately the defense didn't meet all three parts of the test.
Mm-hmm.
They focused on the fact that there wasn't clear proof that Detective Ahern knew his testimony was false at the time.
Right.
They pointed out that the initial medical examiner's report didn't completely contradict what he said to the grand jury.
So it's about the information that was available at that time.
Exactly. It's not about what we know now.
Right.
It's about what they knew then.
And so that's where the knowledge or recklessness part comes in, because they're saying he didn't necessarily know it was wrong.
Exactly. And the majority also put a lot of weight on the eyewitness testimony of Kevin Gallagher.
Oh, right. The eyewitness.
Yeah. They said his account alone was enough for the grand jury to find probable cause. Mm. So even if some of Detective Ahern's statements were later questioned, Gallagher's testimony was strong enough to justify the indictment.
So it sounds like if there's another piece of evidence, another independent piece of evidence that's really compelling.
Yeah.
Then it could kind of protect the indictment from these challenges about other pieces of evidence.
Right. Even if there are some flaws or inconsistencies in other parts of the case.
Right.
If there is enough other evidence to support probable cause.
Okay.
Then the indictment can still stand.
That makes sense.
And Justice Wilkins, who wrote the majority opinion, he also emphasized that courts generally defer to grand jury proceedings.
Right. Like they don't want to interfere.
Exactly. It's supposed to be this independent body.
Right.
And they view dismissing an indictment as a really extreme remedy.
Yeah.
It's only for the most serious cases where there's clear evidence of misconduct.
Okay. So we've talked about the majority. Let's hear the other side. What did the dissenting opinion say?
Okay. So Justice Liakos, who wrote the dissent, he wanted a stricter standard.
Okay.
He thought even unintentional falsehoods,
okay,
if they're significant and they likely influence the indictment,
right,
should be enough to dismiss the indictment.
So for him, it wasn't just about intent.
No.
It was about the effect.
Exactly. It was about whether the grand jury got the right information.
Right. Regardless of whether someone's trying to mislead them or not.
And, you know, his view is that the grand jury's role is really important as a check on the prosecutor's power.
Right.
And that role is weakened if they're given false information, mm-hmm, whether it's intentional or not.
So it really gets to the heart of prosecutorial ethics.
It does.
What is their responsibility? Do they just have to avoid intentionally lying? Or is there a broader obligation to make sure the information is accurate, even if it's an honest mistake?
Yeah, it's a tough question.
And a really important one.
Absolutely.
So how did the court in Mayfield distinguish their decision from other cases where indictments were actually thrown out?
Right. They talked about a couple of key precedents.
Okay.
One was Commonwealth v. O'Dell from 1984.
Okay.
In that case, there was intentional misconduct by the prosecutor, and it led to the indictment being dismissed.
Okay.
But in Mayfield, the court didn't find that same level of intent.
Right.
They also contrasted it with Commonwealth v. Reddington from 1985.
Okay.
That case involved some minor errors in the grand jury testimony.
Okay.
But they weren't seen as serious enough to dismiss the indictment.
Yeah.
So the court basically put Mayfield somewhere in between those two cases.
Hmm.
They said there might have been some inaccuracies,
yeah,
but it wasn't intentional or reckless, and there was enough other evidence to support probable cause.
So let's bring it back to our law students who are listening.
Okay.
What are the key takeaways for them about grand juries and how they work?
All right. So first thing to remember, The standard of proof for a grand jury indictment is probable cause,
okay,
which is lower than the beyond a reasonable doubt standard we need for a trial.
Right, much lower.
The grand jury's job is just to decide if there's enough evidence to move forward with a trial.
Right, just to see if it's worth going to trial.
Exactly.
Okay.
Second, prosecutors have a lot of leeway in presenting their case to a grand jury.
Yeah.
But that discretion isn't unlimited.
Right.
Courts can review their actions, especially if there are allegations of misconduct.
Mm.
And the third takeaway, and this is a big one, it's really hard to successfully challenge an indictment based on flawed evidence.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Mayfield really shows how high that bar is for defendants.
Yeah.
You have to prove those three parts of the test, you know, knowingly or recklessly false evidence.
Right.
Presented to get an indictment and likely influence the grand jury's decision.
Right. It's a lot to prove.
It's a tough legal battle.
Okay. So let's look at some of the nuances in Mayfield. Like, the court didn't really focus on the claims about the cigarette lighter and the semen.
Right.
They focused more on the eyewitness account.
Yeah.
Why was that?
So the court looked at the strength of the evidence overall, and even though the defense questioned the accuracy of those statements about the lighter and the semen,
right,
Kevin Gallagher's testimony directly implicated Mayfield.
Right.
And the court saw that as much more important for establishing probable cause.
Right. So even if some evidence is disputed later,
yeah,
if there's other strong evidence to support probable cause,
mm-hmm,
then the indictment can still stand.
That's right.
So it's not just about one piece of evidence.
No, it's about the totality of the circumstances.
Okay. And the court also issued a warning to prosecutors about showing reckless disregard for the truth.
Mm.
Even though Mayfield didn't meet that standard, what's the significance of that?
So it highlights the ethical obligation of prosecutors.
Yeah.
Even if they're not intentionally presenting false information,
right,
they still can't be reckless about it.
Right.
They have to care about the accuracy of what they're presenting.
And that ties back into Justice Liakos's dissent.
It does.
You know, should reckless misstatements be enough to dismiss an indictment, or would that just lead to too many challenges?
That's the big question.
Yeah.
On one hand, we want to hold prosecutors accountable,
right,
and protect the integrity of the grand jury.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, we don't want to create a system where every indictment can be easily challenged.
Right. It's about finding that balance.
Exactly.
So let's answer a few questions that our law students might have.
Okay, good idea.
Like, why is the standard of proof lower for grand juries than for trials?
So grand juries, they're just a screening process.
Right.
They're not deciding guilt or innocence.
Right. They're just deciding if there's enough to go to trial.
Exactly. Their job is to weed out cases where there's just not enough evidence.
Okay.
If we required the same level of proof as a trial, it would make the whole process way too slow.
Right.
And defeat the purpose of having a grand jury in the first place.
And so how should a case like Mayfield inform how a prosecutor presents evidence, especially if it's uncertain?
Well, it shows that transparency is key.
Yeah.
You can't present uncertain evidence as if it's a fact.
Yeah.
You have to be upfront about any limitations or doubts.
And be mindful of those ethical obligations.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, even if you think you have enough other evidence to get an indictment,
right,
being reckless with questionable information can come back to bite you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to wrap it all up, the big lesson from Commonwealth v. Mayfield is that it's really hard to challenge a grand jury indictment.
Right, it's not impossible.
Right.
But it's a very high bar.
You have to show that the prosecutor did something really wrong.
Exactly. Knowingly or recklessly presenting false information to get an indictment, and that information had to have likely influenced the grand jury.
Right.
You need all of those elements.
And the case shows how much deference courts give to the grand jury.
Yeah.
They don't want to overturn indictments lightly.
They only do it in extreme cases.
So it leaves us with this final thought. Does this high bar for challenging grand jury indictments strike the right balance? You know, is it fair to make it so difficult to challenge an indictment?
Right.
Or does that protect the integrity of the process?
That's a tough question.
It really is.
It's about balancing the need for efficiency with the need to protect against flawed indictments.
Yeah, you know, and that's something for everyone to think about as you're learning about the law and the criminal justice system.
Right. How do we make sure the system is fair,
yeah,
and accurate
and efficient
while still holding people accountable?
It's a constant challenge.
It is, but it's an important one.